The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
And this is The Hard Shoulder, Kieran Cuddihy, coming to you live from O'Sullivan's by the Mill in the north of the great city of Paris. We are celebrating Ireland's performance at the Olympic Games today. Already 7 medals in the bag. It makes these Paris Games the most successful in Ireland's history. 7 already, I say. There may be an 8th tonight. Rashida Adeleke will be taking to the track to run in the 400-metre final, but it is a stacked event. You would have to think that Paulino and Nasser have their eyes on gold and silver and Rashida in with a shout of bronze, but there's about 4 of them who probably think likewise. So fingers, toes and everything crossed for her. We are hugely excited. The bar here behind me, hugely excited. There is a massive amount of people in it already. I'm sure they'll be spilling in to our makeshift studio before the show is out. If you haven't been here, if you've never been to an Olympic Games, this is the Irish house. So this is kind of the home away from home for Irish fans who are here. The home away from home for the Irish athletes is the Irish Cultural Centre down on Rue de Irlandais. I was down there a little bit earlier, and it is where so many of the athletes, once they get kicked out of the village, after 2 days after competing, you know, they get turfed out. They have nowhere to go. Lots of the other athletes from other countries are very envious of the Irish because the Irish have it sus. They've got the cultural centre and they have bed and board there. So when I was down there, I met a couple of them. 2 rowers, Philip Doyle, bronze medalist at these games, of course, and Afrik Kyo, who won a bronze medal in Tokyo. Both are fresh, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed after a night out celebrating. I started by asking Afrik how she found the whole experience of this Paris Olympics.
Very different to Tokyo, obviously. Yeah, it's been great. There's been a huge, huge support from all our friends and family travelling over to see us all compete, which has been amazing. I think personally, obviously, a bit disappointed with my own result, but, you know, watching how the rest of Team Ireland has been great has been, like, it's been amazing to be a part of that as well.
Who else have you watched? What other events have you been going to?
So we've gone to the athletics. We saw the girls in the heats of the 1500 metres. We're going to the athletics tonight to watch Rashida in the final. Very excited about that one. And we went to the USA basketball versus Brazil a couple of days ago. And we have volleyball lined up in a few days.
What was the basketball like?
It was insane. Snoop Dogg was sitting beside us. So yeah, it was...
Sorry, you were that close? He was beside you?
Yeah, he was just, I think, right in front of us to the left. Yeah, it was amazing. The game was good too.
Yeah, whatever. Just like watching people in the crowd.
Yeah.
How much do you enjoy that part? I guess because us watching at home, you know, we think of you all in your lanes, as it were, pardon the pun, but, you know, kind of the rowers, the swimmers, the athletes and everything. How much do you enjoy kind of getting to dip in and out of other sports?
Yeah, I think it's amazing. You know, we spend kind of 3-4 years, not isolated, but, you know, quite a far away in Cork in our own little bubble. We kind of get the impression sometimes that the rest of the teams are all up in Dublin having the crack together, which, you know, probably isn't reality, but it's great to actually kind of hang out with them and mix with them and follow their progress as well, you know. So yeah, it's been great kind of seeing them along here as well this week.
How have you enjoyed it?
Yeah, no, it's phenomenal. I have to say the same thing. Like, Tokyo was you can't even compare what Tokyo was compared to this experience. And I was saying there that the people are just buzzed. They're just enjoying it. And I bumped into so many people and they're sort of saying, oh yeah, we've been watching the rowing. And I'm like, oh, but have you really? Because you don't believe the people at home are actually, you know, tuning in and paying attention. And they're describing races and telling you about this person and that person and things that have happened. And you're like, jeepers, they've actually like watched them and retained them. And I was like, that was 8 days ago. I don't even have that information retained. And they're going to another event and another event. And they're just like, everyone's just absolutely delighted. Myself and Dara were driving on the electric bikes yesterday coming back from an event, and we just through a random street and this Irish lad came flying out of a cafe. Lads, can we get a photo? And I was like, yeah, of course we can. And then the kids were out in the middle of the street and everyone was like, who are these lads? Because we were just in like civvies. We weren't in like civilians.
Yeah.
But we weren't in like Team Ireland gear. So like, how do they even recognise? It's just the people that actually genuinely know who you are, and non-Irish people are recognising you as well. So like, they're, because the French are obviously covering it so well and they're so into the sport and they're doing so well as a country themselves that they're just buzzed for everyone, and it's just sensational. And like Afrik said, we were at the basketball. Leon Marchand was there and he had got a chant to LeBron James and all were playing, and the whole stadium erupted for the swimmer sitting up in the stands.
Yeah.
So
wasn't it amazing, his swimming, the alley.
Yeah, it's great. Unreal. Like, the whole thing has just been a sensational experience.
It's funny. Part of that, I wonder, like, say the exposure you're getting and people talking to you about how, you know, how different kind of stage in the competition went. Like, I think the time zone makes a huge difference, doesn't it? Particularly to a sport like yours, where there's not maybe massive general interest outside kind of the Olympics. How many people are going to get up at 4 a.m. to watch the kind of the first round of the kind of men's sculls, whatever it happens to be?
It's very true. I feel like the time difference has made it such a better experience. We were almost like, people were saying, oh, we're getting up at 3 o'clock to watch your race, and you almost felt a bit guilty in Tokyo. And then as well as that, it made it really difficult for us to keep our routine. Well, for me to keep my routine anyway in Tokyo, I found it hard, because the whole family and everyone at home was waking up and then starting messaging you around 11 o'clock at home, which was like your time you're supposed to be going to bed. So you went all day with them sleeping and no contact, and just sort of staying within ourselves. And then COVID meant that we weren't interacting that much, because you didn't want to ruin somebody else's Olympics by passing something along. And then all of a sudden at 11 p.m. your phone starts lighting up because people are starting to finish work and they want to chat to you and ask you how it's going, and you don't want to be rude. And then it's midnight and you're having to force the phone, you know, put the phone away and try and get to bed for the next day. So the time difference really messed with the body rhythm and the body clock in Tokyo big time.
It obviously didn't mess too much with your rhythm in Tokyo, given your success, but I mean, What do you think at that point? And I'm kind of robbing what I've heard others suggest, is that time difference, it does make a huge difference to a sport in terms of exposure. That people who are into rowing will get up at 3 o'clock in the morning and watch rowing. If you're not, you're not going to get up, but you'll watch in the middle of the day, and yeah, and it increases the amount of eyeballs hugely.
Yeah, and like, you know, there's always these kind of armchair experts that come out every 4 years to watch sports, and I think that's just because they turn on the TV and they sit there all day, they get sucked into it. You know, you start backing a random like net volleyball team, or, you know, you just get sucked into like these random sports. And
diving is my one. Yeah. Every 4 years, I'm telling you, I'm some pro to criticize those divers.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. But like, you wouldn't do that in the middle of the night. So
no.
Yeah, so I think it's just like, obviously people are just sitting down at home for the last 2 weeks and enjoying, you know, whatever is on. Like, we were the same. We came up here 2 nights ago to watch the athletics, but we stayed up for kind of 2 hours afterwards watching the boxing, the velodrome, everything, you know. So yeah, it's definitely made a huge difference.
So at this stage for yourselves, kind of when competition has kind of come and gone, I mean, what's the, is there a come down afterwards, or is it kind of relief that it's, you're in a kind of little window now where you've got a bit of space to think about what's next, or what's the kind of the frame of mind?
Well, obviously, yeah, we finished last week. This week has been amazing. Kind of just, I feel like we're just on holidays together in Paris. But yeah, I think over the next couple of weeks, months, we'll all go off in our own direction, which would be weird because we've been on camp together for the last, obviously we've all been in Cork, but we've been away for the last probably 2 months nearly, sharing rooms, sharing every single meal. You know, I think none of us have probably had an hour's peace at this stage. So yeah, that's going to be a huge adjustment. And some people have probably plans in place, some people have nothing in place. So yeah, it's going to be a weird kind of transition for us all, trying to figure out what's next, I suppose.
For people will think you're a real glutton for punishment. Your plans include a half Ironman.
Well, yeah, I'll get my medical license back for September and then try and get the body moving for a half iron in Marbella at the end of October. So I think the key for myself is, as Afrik said, some people don't have much planned, but I kind of need that. There's something to push towards and something to do. So if I sat and had nothing to be at for long enough, I'd end up in mischief. So I just keep myself going, keep myself pushing on. But like, yeah, the next few months are going to be learning to swim. Well, I can swim. Learning to properly swim, getting out on the bike, and getting the running shoes dusted off, and then trying to get back into some kind of semblance to make a decision about the rowing later on in the year.
Yeah, what do you think that decision might be?
I always say never make the decision now. In the summer, rowing is class. Africa's the experience here in the Olympics wasn't the result that they deserved and didn't reflect their talent as a boat, but they've 3 World Cup medals from during the year. They've done immense like immensely well in the women's pair, and there's definitely a future in rowing for her. But she's looking at it now, sitting in Paris in the sunshine, having a coffee, looking out at the most, well, probably Rome I thought was beautiful, but Paris is something else. And it's rose tinted glasses, so you're making a decision with the wrong, in the wrong context. So I think whenever we, if you're sitting in Cork in December and it's dark at 6 p.m. it's a different day to be making that decision. So I think you just have to take it one step at a time and figure out what the priorities are going forward. It's not a no, like definitely not a no, but I think some time away from the sport to look at careers and try and plan something next, because you know we're not the Adam Peaty, we're not making hundreds of thousands a year as a sports person. You do it for the love of the sport, you know. It's almost a punishment to your bank account to do rowing. So going forward, you need to make some sensible decisions for, you know, we're both in the depth of adulthood now. We're both over 30. She's older than me, but
two weeks.
So I'm turning 32 in September. So like that's a big factor going forward, yeah. For launching the career. And you know, you're not a 21-year-old who can spend the next 4 or 5 years in Cork away from family and friends and not looking after your career going forward. So there has to be a bit of future planning, and I think that'll come into play. So that decision is to be made later on down the line.
Africa, I like Philip's answer. I asked him about his plans, and half his answer was trying to convince you not to pack it in.
yeah, no, sure, he'd be lost without me. But no, he's dead right. Like, you can't be making a decision here and now, because this is not reality at all. I think I've kind of gone through this maybe a few times already where I've thought, oh, I'm done. But I think I just kept answering my question by showing up to training every day. You know, I was like, oh, I haven't decided yet, but I was like, I'm still here. So that was kind of the way I answered it. But yeah, you know, I think, as well as he pointed out, we're not fresh young chickens anymore. And I think we just have to consider our bodies as well. And, you know, unfortunately, while we're very young, our training ages are probably a bit older than the rest of the group. And yeah, that starts to take its toll as well, you know, kind of injuries creeping in that. So yeah, we have to kind of consider a lot of things.
So yeah, so I mean, what are the metrics that apply when you make that decision? Like, is it, like, there's kind of physical capability obviously comes into it, but how much of it is just down to a question of enjoyment? I'm actually not getting fulfillment out of this anymore.
Yeah, that's huge. You know, you obviously have to love what you do. If we're like down in Cork away from friends and family, showing up to training 2-3 times a day, if you're not enjoying it, you know, which we don't every day, but you know, as a whole, if you're not enjoying it, yeah, it's not worth it really.
And is that just something then that kind of happens incrementally, that there's more days you don't enjoy?
Probably, yeah. But I think, you know, obviously you get a lot of, we're very competitive people, you get a lot of enjoyment out if you're going well. So like, obviously if the boat you're in or your own like personal performance is good, like that will probably give you a lot of enjoyment. But then that might come to a point where that's just not enough. And you know, obviously we all make choices to do this and to miss all the like parties, weddings, whatever, time with friends and family. And when I suppose you start to think, okay, maybe those choices aren't worth it anymore, maybe I would get more happy instead of making other choices. Yeah, I think that's kind of where you might start to weigh up other options.
And like, in terms of the other point Philip makes about kind of, say, the bank balance and the grind on that regard, you know, how much support do yourselves get, say, compared to what you feel maybe you need?
Well, obviously we're supported by Sport Ireland, which is great. You know, a lot of the rowers are supported by Sport Ireland, obviously due to our performances. Like, it is very performance based, but you know, we have put in a good shift over the last maybe kind of 5 to 10 years where a lot of our athletes are on funding. And that's crucial, because when I moved down to Cork initially, I wasn't on funding. I kind of had to take a risk, go down. I was working full time, training around that. And it was only kind of after 2 years when I eventually was able to get up to that level that I was given funding and I could step away from my job. But yeah, you know, it gets you by.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's...
But it doesn't do any more than that.
No. You're not saving, or you're not, you know, going off buying great things or anything like that. Yeah. It's enough.
And look, there'll be people listening who'll think, you know, I don't know, I don't want to get into kind of a rouse with people on the text line now about about, you know, taxpayers' money and how it should be spent. But in terms of the funding model, can I ask you a question? So you speak to some athletes, and what they often are critical of is that you need to achieve a certain kind of level before you kind of unlock the kind of higher funding. And they say, well, actually, you know, if that kicked in earlier, more people might kick on to that higher level. And also what sometimes athletes are critical of, off the record often, is they say a dip in performance often then will result in a dip in funding. You know what I mean? And they say, actually, that's when you need the funding.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. And like, it's hard to know what's the right way to do it, because obviously there's so many sports. It's such a broad range of sports we have in our country. I think it's 4 goals in 4 different sports this week, so which is amazing. So it's hard to know where to put the money, who to back. And, you know, obviously we've had a lot of success in rowing and we have a huge group coming up behind us now. So you obviously want to support them too. And I think they are looking at peeling back the funding for our under-23s because there's just so many of them. So, yeah, it's hard. And there's no right answer, obviously, because you obviously want to support everyone. I know there are a couple of other initiatives, like there's the Paris scholarships backed a couple of our athletes. So while Sport Ireland directly weren't able to support them, there were some other funds there as well. So yeah, maybe it's just other avenues. Maybe we need to come in and maybe take the pressure off that kind of, you know, government funding. Maybe there needs to be some other sources.
I get that's partly what Abbottstown seeks to address, is that, you know, you can invest in resources there and athletes then can kind of pool them to a degree. You know, if you go back kind of 4 or 5 Olympic cycles, kind of Beijing and before that, or even London and before that, none of that existed. Everybody was individually running off and, you know, kind of having to source things that now they can pool. So I guess that's maybe part of the solution?
Potentially, but I think, like, the talking about the bank balance earlier, like, I've no, the Sport Ireland funding is sensational. You know, it's a bursary funding for you, but what I was sort of, rowing isn't a commercially viable sport, like you said. There's no real general interest outside of the Olympics, so, you know, for commercial sponsorship, etc., for rowing, it's poor. So then that means that, you know, the we are completely reliant on Sport Ireland funding. Like, we are heavily reliant on a high percentage of Sport Ireland funding, which is amazing. And we're, I'd say, nearly top funded. Yeah. I can remember, if I remember correctly, across athletes and the National Rowing Centre. And we've got a sensational setup down there. We have everything we need. Over the years, me and South Africa and myself have seen a huge transition in resources and availability, and the amount of time and effort and the development of the Rowing Centre into an athletes' lounge and the coaches over the years. Do you know, so there's no issue with that. The problem that we have with the sport is there's no supplemental commercial stuff that we can do around that, and you're kind of stuck in Cork away from a lot of the big business in Dublin, which would be supporting a lot of the other athletes that would be up in Blanchardstown. And you do miss that tap into the corporate side of things, because Afric's a phenomenal advocate for women in sport. You know, she's a master's in business, and she goes in and does some great talks for some companies, but there's a few times where she's been like, oh, can I go to Dublin to speak for X or Y or whatever, and the coaches are like, no, that's 3 hours in the drive up, 3 hours in the drive down, that's too much, you're missing a whole day of training. Whereas if she was in Dublin, she could pop in for an hour, do, you know, boost the sport, be an ambassador for such a great thing, to get more women in and talk about her experience and her medal in Tokyo and like the success she's had. But it's not a possibility. And then also the fact that that's bursary funding from the government, which is it's phenomenal, and it's non-taxed, and it's not a salary. So I can't walk into the bank and say, oh, I have X amount of a deposit, can I get a mortgage? Because they're going to say, no, you earn no money. You get a grant, you get a grant, and they're like, and next year you might not get that grant, so we're not giving you a mortgage. And then I'm like, oh, but I'm a doctor, and then I give, you're not physically working enough. You don't have you're getting ad hoc shifts. You know, you don't have an employment contract, so you can't step onto the property ladder. And like, and the young guys in the team, that doesn't matter to them, but for us, it's starting to become a bit of a sticking point that we're sort of thinking, so it would be nice at 32 to be able to get yourself a house or jump onto the property ladder or whatever. And like, we're renting down in Cork, and Cork's a beautiful county, but like, we love being down there, but it would be nice to start to develop that real side of life that we've been away from. But yeah, like Afric said, you have to get on the system, then you have to work hard to get the funding, and then once you have the funding, then you can work well within it. But your performance drive your results. And after Tokyo, I had to go back to do a year in the hospital. When I come back, obviously I hadn't had the same development that year, and I jumped into a boat with a young under-23 guy who had just won a medal at the World Championships, and Dara was still working in New York at the stage, my partner from this Olympics. And we went and we didn't do great comparatively to how we are now, and our funding, we dropped down to the bottom rank of the Sport Ireland funding, and that was a real struggle then to come in at that low end. And then then that year we came fourth at Europeans, bronze at the World Championships, bronze at the World Cup, qualified for the boat to the Olympics. But it wasn't until the January, 7 months later, then that the funding started to reflect that. And I knew I could do it. The performance was there, the training numbers were there. So like you said, if there's maybe more scope to move and switch the funding during the cycle, it might be able to bring more people on. But then you also don't want that to have the negative effect of, if somebody starts not performing during the middle of the year, are they just going to cut them down? So you have to balance the security of people who have the funding to the ones who maybe are pushing from the back. So you don't want to punish some to reward others, because then it could end up in a vicious cycle. So it's a question to be addressed by somebody, not us. But I think it's great to have our insight, and we do. It's a big topic, to be honest, between us. We talk about it a lot.
Yeah. Well, listen, before I let you go, let's just reflect again on kind of more broadly this Olympic experience. You mentioned the number of gold medals. I think New Zealand got a gold medal yesterday. Pushed us down the medal table. I know. Yeah. No, it's not. And listen, we're here obviously here tonight, and Rashid is running a little bit later. And listen, whatever the result, I mean, she's been phenomenal. Yeah. She's been absolutely phenomenal. And I think maybe the semifinals, you know, for those, what would you call them earlier, after the kind of the armchair experts, that semifinal, they might have at least been a bit sobering, and they realised, actually, we can't just be hanging medals around people's necks here. There's a couple of phenomenal athletes. Mm. And, you know, she's probably racing for bronze. And even at that, there's three or four of them who are racing for bronze. So, listen, whatever happens, we're all immensely proud of her. But how proud are we of just being part of a team that's kind of been lauded at home as our most successful to have ever gone to an Olympics?
Yeah, it's insane. I think, you know, London was, they got five medals, I think, and then eventually six.
Rob got one eventually.
So, yeah, it's insane that we've kind of outperformed them. And I think there was a lot of boxing medals as well in that game. So just the actual kind of spread across all the sports, I think, is probably like the best part of it all. You know, it's not all just coming from one sport this time. So yeah, you know, it's really cool. And, you know, a lot of those athletes as well probably have a lot more games in them. So yeah, it's definitely a good sign for the future, I think.
And how much are you looking forward to this civic reception on Monday?
Yeah, immensely. I'm actually more looking forward to Sarah Lavin's semi-final today at lunchtime. So I'll be watching that. And tonight we've got tickets to go and watch Adelecki, so we'll be buzzed for it. Yeah, to be honest, the interest that we each all have in each other's sport at the minute is brilliant, and we're all watching it together. And like you said, we become the armchair. I don't know nothing about 400 meter running, and I'm sitting there being like,
God, she's tying up.
She's pulling up there. She knows she dipped into the line. I don't know. She looked, and then we're all experts at the end of the day in something, but sure, at least we can understand the pressure. And at 21 years old, to take on so much for the country, wants her to have a medal, but almost expects it as well. So I really hope she gets what she deserves and comes away happy with what she's done, because I think she should.
Yeah, she certainly should. Listen, thanks a million, folks, for chatting to me.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.